Radio Reading Services of Greater Cincinnati presents The Science World. Welcome to The Science World, a half hour of news and commentary in science, technology, and medicine. On today's program, I'll be reading from the May 31st and July 19th, 2019 editions of Science Magazine. I'm Mary Kay Delgado. A call to climate action. The science is clear. Students are striking, and publics around the globe are demanding a new level of leadership to tackle the climate crisis before it is too late. Climate extremes are inflicting serious economic losses on nations, and climate-driven issues such as sea level rise, regional aridification, food shortages, disease spread, and massive biodiversity loss only promise ever-worsening costs. Progress has been too slow since 195 countries signed the 2015 Paris Agreement, committing to hold the increase in the global average temperature to well below 2 degrees centigrade, above pre-industrial levels. To prevent planetary climate disaster, we must all work to speed up bold initiatives that ensure a rapid exit from the era of fossil fuels and drive carbon dioxide and other greenhouse gas emissions to the atmosphere down to zero in a manner that benefits everyone on the planet, not just a few. Much attention has been focused on promoting the transition to low-carbon energy because of the role that fossil fuel combustion has played in fouling the air and disrupting climate. Moreover, the technology needed to electrify the planet using renewable energy is already or close to being cheaper than fossil fuel or nuclear energy. So the existing fossil fuel power plants and fossil fuel transportation can be phased out completely within two decades. Investment in new fossil fuel infrastructure must cease, as existing natural gas and nuclear plants serve only as temporary bridges to a cleaner energy world. At the same time, every economic sector must innovate to become more energy efficient and decarbonize. With continued innovation, the effective management of marine, coastal, agricultural, forest, and other carbon sequestering systems can help offset those greenhouse emissions that cannot be eliminated quickly. The circle of solutions to address the climate crisis must quickly widen and include effective ways to soften the blows of climate change that are already inevitable. Solutions must strive to enable communities, businesses, societies, and natural systems to become resilient and adapt to the changing climate. The rapid expansion of adaptation strategies around the globe requires greater integration of academic research knowledge with the insight gained from real-world practice. And this means placing greater priority on partnership between academics and non-academics. Nevertheless, it is also abundantly clear that absent climate change mitigation, adaptation strategies will in many cases become overwhelmed, leading to unacceptable costs to both human and natural systems. The top priority must remain the elimination of the greenhouse gas emissions that are driving climate change, and greater emphasis must be placed on positive synergies between mitigation and adaptation actions, especially those that maximize the protection of biodiversity and soils. The climate crisis requires societal transformation of a scale and rapidity that has rarely been achieved. Indeed, the last time such a change took place was sparked by global economic depression in World War II. What enabled action then was a perceived existential threat and broad support in society. Today we are faced with such a threat, but widening wealth disparities and special interests impede the needed change. The solution to the climate crisis thus requires a strong commitment to equity and justice, to indigenous peoples and future generations, and to a global transformation that vastly increases the number of those who benefit while dramatically reducing the number of those who do not. This is true at national scales and also at the planetary scale. Only by working together across divides, only by working to empower others, and only by making it a top priority now, can the community of nations avoid catastrophic climate change while creating a more sustainable and just 21st century. The call to faster climate action is to all who can contribute knowledge, momentum, or passion to drive the quick embrace of effective solutions. Written by Jonathan T. Overpeck and Cecilia Conde. Jonathan Overpeck is a collegiate professor and dean at the School for Environment and Sustainability, the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor. Cecilia Conde is a researcher in the Center of Atmospheric Sciences at the National Autonomous University of Mexico, Mexico City, Mexico. She was the general coordinator for adaptation to climate change during the former Mexican government from 2013 to 2017. And in the news, $125 million. That was a gift to the New York Genome Center, a consortium of institutions in New York City, from the Simons Foundation and the Carson Family Charitable Trust, to establish research programs in cancer and neurodegenerative diseases. It is one of the largest gifts for medical research. Scientists rally to restore Notre Dame. A month after fire ravaged Notre Dame Cathedral in Paris, scientists and research bodies are organizing to help restore the building and advance scientific knowledge. The French National Research Agency, CNRS, in Paris, announced on May 20th the creation of a task force that will inventory knowledge and data about the cathedral from CNRS and other institutions. The task force is also advising how to gather and sort materials from the cathedral using technologies such as photogrammetry and drones, said Martin Rigert, who co-leads the CNRS task force at a French parliament hearing last week. What's more, researchers are planning to use the April 15th fire as an opportunity to collect otherwise inaccessible data. For example, by analyzing certain isotopes in wood from the cathedral's timber frame to glean insights about the medieval climate. More than 200 researchers, most from France and specializing in many different disciplines, created a group that pairs scientists with decision makers and journalists seeking specific information and enables informal exchanges between scientists. Quark inventor Gell-Mann dies. Murray Gell-Mann, an opinionated New Yorker who predicted the existence of quarks, died on May 24th at age 89. In 1961, Gell-Mann proposed that particles that interact through strong nuclear force, such as protons, neutrons, and pions, must consist of lighter particles he named quarks, a word he borrowed from James Joyce's novel Finnegan's Wake. Specifically, Gell-Mann explained both these naturally occurring particles and their heavier cousins, fleeting particles such as kaons and sigma baryons that experimental physicists had produced with atom smashers. By assuming the observed particles consisted of different combinations of three types of quarks, Israeli physicist Yuval Naaman, who died in 2006, and Russian-American physicist George Zweig independently proposed similar ideas. Gell-Mann won the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1969. Physicists now know of six types of quarks. UK pharma payments tallied. Drug companies gave patient organizations in the United Kingdom more than £57 million over a five-year period, often to support their outreach to policymakers and the public, a report says. Annual contributions more than doubled from 2012 to 2016, researchers in the United Kingdom and Sweden wrote in the BMJ last week. 10 large pharmaceutical firms provided 69% of donations, with one, Pfizer, giving about 17% of the total. The researchers traced the money using company disclosure reports, mandated by European rules that took effect in 2012, and information on multiple patient organization websites. The author suggests the money could influence public and policymaker perceptions and urge greater transparency around these donations, for example, by creating a regularly updated payment database that centralizes the information. 2.1 million gene therapy okayed. The U.S. Food and Drug Administration last week approved a new gene therapy for a neuromuscular disease called spinal muscular atrophy, or SMA, that stands to become the most expensive drug ever at a cost of $2.1 million. Untreated, the severe form of the disease usually leads to death by age 2. Called Zolgensma, the treatment from drug maker Novartis is a one-time intravenous administration of a virus ferrying a gene for a missing protein into the motor neuron cells of babies born with SMA. In a clinical trial, most infants who received Zolgensma were later able to sit up and breathe on their own, and some could walk. The drug will compete with one called Spinraza that has similar effects, but must be injected in the spine every few months. EU elections spare science. Populist and Eurosceptic parties made modest gains in last week's elections for the European Parliament, a relief to scientists who feared bigger gains by political movements that have flirted with anti-scientific ideas and threatened academic freedom. Observers in Brussels expect the new parliament to continue to defend generous research budgets. The electoral success of pro-European Union Green and Liberal groups at the expense of the parliament's traditionally two dominant parties could lead to small shifts in science and technology priorities, such as greener policies. But the election's direct influence on EU science policy is limited because many details of Horizon Europe, its next seven-year research funding program, have already been agreed by the outgoing parliament and member states. Algeria, Argentina halt malaria. Malaria's global footprint became a little smaller on May 22nd when the World Health Organization, or WHO, in Geneva, Switzerland, declared Argentina and Algeria free of the mosquito-borne disease. Both countries have battled it for centuries. Algeria reported its last cases of indigenous malaria in 2013, whereas Argentina did so in 2010. WHO's certification process takes several years. The dual victory is welcome news amid a sometimes discouraging global battle against malaria. That fight has stalled after years of unprecedented progress, WHO reported in its 2018 World Malaria Report. In 2017, there were an estimated 219 million cases and 435,000 deaths. Of 20 other countries identified in 2016 as candidates for malaria elimination by 2020, only one, Paraguay, has so far succeeded. 9 others are on schedule, but the other 10 are either off track or somewhat off track, the WHO says. More boats, smaller catches. Fishing fleets have doubled since 1950, but as fish stocks have become strained, the vessels are catching only 20% as much fish for the same amount of effort, according to a global analysis published this week. In Asia, the number of fishing vessels tripled. The global trend is likely to continue and highlights the need to improve fisheries management in many places, the authors say in the proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The study documented that ships' motors have become more powerful, expanding their range and ability to bring more fish to port. Previous studies of global fishing fleets have typically relied on incomplete data from intergovernmental agencies. For the new work, researchers at the University of Tasmania in Hobart, Australia, gathered additional data from about 100 countries. Effort will staunch pollution from World War II's sunken ships. Marine archaeologists have joined an effort to stop oil leaking from wrecks sunk in the Pacific Ocean during World War II. Oil from as many as 3,000 ships threaten ecosystems, fisheries, and tourism. Focusing on the biggest threats, engineers will try to apply a variety of remedies, including pumping oil directly from storage tanks, using cathodic protection to prevent ship hulls from rusting further, and employing bacteria to break down oil, a process called bioremediation. The project is a partnership of the Major Projects Foundation, which supports marine research and conservation, the University of Newcastle in Australia, and the Secretariat of the Pacific Regional Environment Program, a consortium of Pacific Island nations. Leaks from wrecks in Chuuk Lagoon in Micronesia helped spur the effort, announced last week. One wreck, the Japanese cargo ship San Francisco Maru, was carrying a light tank and other military supplies when it was bombed and sank in 1944. House drops gene editing ban. A U.S. House of Representatives spending panel last week dropped legislative language that banned clinical trials that used embryo editing to create babies with heritable genetic modifications. In 2015, Congress, then controlled by Republicans, first approved a spending bill for the 2016 fiscal year that barred the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, from considering applications for such clinical trials. Concerns about such experiments intensified in November 2018, when a Chinese scientist announced that he had used the CRISPR gene editing tool to modify the genomes of twin baby girls to prevent disease. But Democrats won control of the House in the November 2018 elections, and a 2020 draft spending bill approved on May 23rd by a House Appropriations Subcommittee omits the rider because it could limit scientific research, a Democratic aide said. The Republican-controlled U.S. Senate has not yet introduced its version of the bill, which would fund FDA. Football loses the mortality game. An unprecedented study comparing 3,419 former National Football League pros to 2,708 veterans of Major League Baseball found that between 1979 and 2013, the football players died from all causes at a significantly higher rate, and that their death rates from heart and brain disease were 2.4 and 3 times higher, respectively, than those of former baseball players. Previous mortality studies compared NFL players with the general male population. The study was published on May 24th in JAMA Network Open. Botswana lifts ban on hunting elephants and lions. Botswana last week made it legal again to kill elephants, lions, and other large mammals commonly sought by trophy hunters. The country is home to the world's largest elephant population, estimated at more than 130,000. A government report in February recommended allowing hunting, citing increases in human-elephant conflict, loss of livestock to predators, and economic hardship on communities that had been supported by hunting revenue before a ban went into effect in 2014. Conservationists have broadly condemned the reversal, with some arguing it is an attempt by President Masasi to win over rural voters in an election year. A poll conducted by Humane Society International suggests the resumption of hunting could deter tourists wanting only to observe wild animals. Tourism accounts for 1/5 of Botswana's economy. An editorial by Jeremy Berg, Editor-in-Chief, Science Journals. A Child of Apollo. I was 11 years old when my neighborhood gathered to watch Apollo 11 transport human beings to the surface of the moon for the first time. We clustered around a black-and-white television when, at dusk in California, Neil Armstrong took his first lunar steps and said, "That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind." This issue of Science celebrates the 50th anniversary of this landmark event. The path that led to this success transformed our understanding of humankind's place in the universe and demonstrated the power of an audacious goal in driving technology forward. After the launch of Sputnik in 1957, the United States focused on the need for engineers and scientists to keep up technologically with the Soviet Union. In 1961, President John F. Kennedy proposed that the United States, quote, should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the earth, unquote. The ambitious National Aeronautics and Space Administration, NASA, project had three phases: Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo. I first became aware of the space program with the last of the Mercury flights, and was fully engaged by the time of the first crewed Gemini launch in March 1965. I remember watching the launches, splashdowns, and the spacewalk of Ed White tethered to Gemini 4 in June 1965. Gemini model kits soon joined my list of desired presents. As a child, the progress of the program seemed exciting but inevitable, particularly given the confident attitudes portrayed by the astronauts and NASA staff. I recall being shocked by the horrible fire in a sealed command module that killed three astronauts as they prepared for the first Apollo mission in January 1967. NASA spent a year extensively redesigning the command module, focusing on safety, possible modes of failure, and reliability. In December 1968, Apollo 8 orbited the moon for the first time. This vantage point offered a new perspective of Earth, captured by an iconic color photograph of our home planet rising over the lunar surface. Such pictures depicted a unified, blue, cloud-decorated planet without national boundaries. 7 months later, after two additional flights, Apollo 11 headed to the moon with the goal of placing two astronauts on the lunar surface. After a dramatic journey to find a suitable landing site, the lunar lander settled into the lunar soil, and less than 7 hours later, Neil Armstrong took his famous first step. The technology that enabled the Apollo missions was incredibly impressive at the time, but is remarkably primitive by today's standards. The guidance computer was less powerful than a cheap, modern handheld calculator. The successes of the moon missions were primarily triumphs of rocket engineering. Nevertheless, the moon missions enabled many new scientific directions, beginning with studies of samples from the lunar surface. Such endeavors have the potential to capture the public's imagination, but as these are contemplated, it's important to articulate clearly the benefits and challenges of including oxygen-breathing, waste-producing, radiation-sensitive human beings, along with robotic and computer systems that are now so powerful. If the major goal is to develop technologies for future human space travel, including astronauts, may make sense. However, if the goal is scientific exploration, robotic extensions of humans offer many advantages. And that's today's look in the science world. Our material came from the July 19th and August 2nd editions of Science World magazine. The Science World is produced at the studios of Radio Reading Services of Greater Cincinnati. Questions or comments should be directed to Radio Reading Services of Greater Cincinnati, 2045 Gilbert Avenue, Cincinnati, Ohio, 45202. Join us next week when we will again explore the science world. I'm Mary Kay Delgado.